live from Manchester, New Hampshire, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Arnie Arneson, Dean Spiliotis, Tom Bevin of RealClearPolitics.com, and a little bit later on we'll be joined by Congressman Peter King, Republican of New York, and we thank you very much for joining us. Our program coming to you from the beautiful Radisson Hotel in downtown Manchester, New Hampshire, which is really the focal point of a lot of media activity and political activity. It's great to be with you this evening from coast to coast and border to border, and we've been coming to New Hampshire for a long, long time, and Dean, one of our guests this evening, has been with us on a number of those shows, and Arnie Arneson has also been with us in the past, so we thank you very much. It's good to be back with good friends, and Tom Bevin, a good friend from Chicago, joins us as well. Tom Bevin, RealClearPolitics.com. You are by, for, and about political polls. There's all kinds of polls. The latest poll is from USA Today, very hot, less than an hour old. What is it saying about what is likely to happen Tuesday in New Hampshire?
Well, it's the latest numbers from USA Today Gallup show Obama opening up a 13-point lead on Hillary Clinton, 41-28, John Edwards, 19. So that's a bit bigger than we've seen. We have seven polls that have been conducted since the 2nd of January through the 5th of January. Obama's leading in most of them, but with smaller leads than that. So that might indicate, this race might be breaking in his direction.
Now, WMUR, which is one of the major television stations in the state, their recent poll with CNN had Clinton and Obama tied at 33% and Edwards at 20%. What is the track record of that poll, Dean?
It's all done at the University of New Hampshire Survey Center. Andy Smith is the survey director, has a great reputation. He's been polling in the state for years, so people usually put a lot of stock in it.
The excitement that is in the body politic for Barack Obama, Arnie Arneson, how much of that has been jacked up post-Iowa, or was it at a high level before Iowa?
There was a high curiosity factor about Barack Obama. There's no question that, Hillary Clinton is the incumbent in this race. The Bill and Hill show has been around in 92 and 96, now 2008. So there can't be excitement for Hillary Clinton, but there has to be recognition and acceptance and a feeling of comfortableness. The problem is Barack Obama is the magic in this campaign. And, you got magic versus machine, and usually magic fizzles. What Iowa proved to New Hampshire voters is that, the magic was real because it actually had political muscle behind it. And no sooner did that happen than it was like permission for them to actually follow through and go beyond inevitable to where their heart and their head was. And it is, I was on the back roads of New Hampshire the other day, and I thought, okay, I'm just going to do a little sign check, because this is not where campaigns operate. Two candidates had signs on the back roads of New Hampshire. Who were the two candidates? Ron Paul and Barack Obama. It says it all about what this place feels like. Ron Paul's not going anywhere, but he has missionaries. He doesn't have supporters. These people are cloning everywhere. And Barack Obama has got people so excited they can't quite contain themselves. Hillary Clinton had an event yesterday. 250 people showed up. By the time she got done with her speech, which went on and on and on and on.
Spoke for 2 hours, right?
She spoke for 2 hours. People were ready to slit their wrists. They walked out of the room like thinking, I can't vote for this person. I had to make lunch.
Last night, there was a huge debate, 3 hours on ABC. Republicans went first for 90 minutes, then the Democrats. Focusing on what happened with the Democrats. Tom Bevin, how would you gauge how all three candidates did last night? Did they do what they were supposed to do or needed to do in your
view? On the Democratic side?
On the Democratic side.
Yeah, the most interesting thing was Edwards decided that he was going to try and, kill Hillary and knock her out of the race by aligning himself with Obama. The interesting thing about that, and I wrote about this today, this morning on the website, is that Hillary really sort of pivoted a couple different ways. She had a line at the debate last night where she said that words are nice, but action is better, and no matter how beautifully they may be spoken, words are not action. And later in the spin room, Jay Carson, her spokesperson, said another interesting thing. He said that basically implied that Obama wasn't tough enough to handle himself and that John Edwards had to jump in and defend him. And this morning, Hillary had a rally down in Nashville, pulled 3,000 people, There are rumors that she packed that that rally with out-of-state supporters. But nevertheless, she was much, much better. She was kept it to about 20 minutes. She was very passionate, very engaged, and she did take direct shots at Obama, called him a, she said America needs a doer, not a talker.
But Obama last night, he didn't hit a home run. I mean, debate is not his strength, Dean, is it?
That's right, although as we were discussing before the show, the format may have favored him a little bit this time. So he was able to sit down, had a little more time because there were fewer candidates on stage, so that gave him an opportunity to kind of develop his answers. He's traditionally had uneven debate performances. That's my sense of how he's done. He particularly has struggled in the past with shorter time frames, 30 seconds, 45 seconds. So the longer time and the format, I think, it helped him do what he needed to do. He didn't make any major mistakes, and he looked reasonably presidential, which is what they wanted to do.
Let's switch over to the Republican side. The WMUR CNN poll, McCain at 33, Romney at 27, Giuliani surprising at 14%, Huckabee 11. There's a couple of other polls that flip-flop Giuliani and Huckabee. In the Republican debate last night, whereas the focal point was clearly Romney, did Romney do well in your view last night, Tom?
You know, it's tough to say. I mean, he took some brutal shots. I mean, it was just a pig pile on top of the guy. And in some ways, I think he held up well. He looked almost, took on a victim status. But what about
on illegal immigration? He would not. He was a pit bull. He would not let that issue go. And that is the issue.
No, but you know,
at least what I'm hearing is the hot button issue.
You know what came out of that debate, though, was that he, McCain camp was just absolutely banging away on the fact that he admitted in the debate, essentially, that, and he had to reiterate it today, that McCain's plan was, in fact, not amnesty, despite the fact that he's been calling it. And in the spin room, the McCain camp actually produced a mailer that had, one of Romney's mailers that had McCain's picture on it, said he supports amnesty. So they really, you know, sort of pounded that home against him after the debate.
What is the normally the politician from Massachusetts has done well here? Paul Tsongas won here, Michael Dukakis won here, but people don't seem to be gravitating to
Romney. No, that's not true. They did gravitate to him for quite a while. I mean, but the problem is a good friend of mine, Dave Carney, describes the Mitt Romney campaign this way: it's a mile wide and a centimeter deep. And that's really been his problem. He thought that somehow this could be an acquisition mode. It's been a very much of a corporate campaign. It hasn't been a passion campaign. It hasn't been a political campaign. It's like somehow he thought he was supposed to acquire the state of New Hampshire. He should have just filed with the Registry of Deeds. The problem is what happened is as soon as John McCain found his footing again. Remember, he was the heartthrob of New Hampshire in 2000. He won the majority of votes on the Republican side and 3 out of 4 on the independent side. And he came back and reminded everyone why they so admired him. People admire John McCain. They think Mitt Romney's okay, but that's it. Nothing
Dean,
more.
What was your take on the debate last night?
Similar to what we're hearing here. I think Romney got hit really hard last night. There were moments where I thought he did a nice job in handling some of the policy-related questions. McCain clearly seemed to be having a good time and is probably, you know, right now riding a bit of a wave of support.
1-800-723-8289. Taking America's political pulse from coast to coast and border to border tonight, live from Manchester, New Hampshire.
Outside the soon-to-be-completed Museum of Broadcast Communications.
Psst. Hey, you.
Who, me?
Yeah. What are you looking at?
I'm looking at a beautiful new building.
Get it right. You're looking at me. I'm the beautiful new Museum of Broadcast Communications.
A talking building?
No, a talking horse.
Hello.
Yes, I'm a talking building. I communicate. And I need some money.
I don't know if I have any spare change on me.
I get it. Here, look inside this door.
Here's Johnny.
Wow.
You think that's something? Look at this.
Bozo's Circus is on the air.
Boy, that's something.
You see, weren't those shows important to you?
Sure.
Well, if you donate just a couple of shekels, I could open my doors to show you the entire history of broadcasting.
Everything?
I'm brand spanking new kid, but I'm a few bricks shy of a full house, so I need you to donate. I need your help.
You need help? I'm talking to a building.
The brand new Museum of Broadcast Communications needs your help. Go to museum.tv and help bring the history of broadcasting to life.
From Boston, Massachusetts to Fresno, California, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. 1-800-723-8289 is the telephone number. Let's reach out and take some callers. Let's go to Charles, listening to us on XM Radio in New York City. Go ahead. You're on the air. On line three. Go ahead.
You were referred to earlier to the fact that there were several polls that came out today, and you didn't specifically state it, but the implication was that they were kind of all over the place, and you were discussing, well, which ones are accurate, which ones have a good track record, which ones don't. I just wanted to point out that of the six surveys released today, which covered January 5th, where surveying took place on January 5th, all but one of them actually agree with each other once you take into account the margin of error. So there really isn't any statistically compelling need to figure out why they're different, when in fact the difference is more statistical noise than anything else. And they all seem basically in agreement if you average them, sort of like what Real Clear Politics does,
yes.
But I use a slightly different method. If you average them out, they're all pretty together on the fact that Obama is somewhere in the upper 30s at the moment in New Hampshire, Clinton is somewhere in the upper 20s, and Edwards is hovering at or just above 20%.
Thank you very much for your call. I want to follow up on something that really has been the focal point of the campaign for a long time, and that is the word change, that Obama is pitching himself as the change agent. To some extent, Mike Huckabee is doing the same thing. Is there something that's in the body politic that is working for Obama that's also working for Huckabee, in your view, Dean?
Sure. If you look at any of the polling data over the last year, you can look at it in terms of presidential popularity. You can look at it in terms of unhappiness over the war in Iraq, concerns about the economy. There's a whole dissatisfaction with Congress. There are a whole constellation of factors out there which suggest that people are fundamentally unhappy. I think something like 2/3 of Americans think the country is moving in the wrong direction. So there's the sense out there that people want change. We're seeing in the Democratic side the debate between change versus change in experience. People are really sort of looking forward when they're making their voting decision. So it really is kind of out there, and you see it in the data.
The conventional wisdom is that because there are very few evangelicals in New Hampshire, that the appeal of Mike Huckabee isn't there.
Well,
any sense of that?
I want to challenge that a little bit, and here's the reason. Huckabee did not campaign here. And Huckabee's message here is not an evangelical message. Huckabee's message here is a populist message.
Yeah.
He's fabulous with union workers. He's fabulous with people who've lost their job. He understands the subprime mess. He feels your pain with health care. He has such a great populist message. He just doesn't have organization, money, or time in New Hampshire. What he realized was that Iowa gave him something he could not replicate here. He had the homeschoolers. He had the fundamentalist Christians that were prepared to network for him because they really fed into who he was and where they needed to take him. He never had the time to fertilize that campaign here, Dean.
Yeah, you really get the sense that they decided up front that,
exactly. Oh,
we're probably not a good fit for New Hampshire, so we're going to direct our resources towards Iowa.
That might have been a mistake, because
yeah.
I think he was a better fit than he knew, because he was playing his Baptist card. What he didn't realize is the populist message, because of people like Pat Buchanan, really resonates here. And if he had spent a little more time and energy, he could have actually seen a much
bigger one. And also, Jimmy Carter did well here in 76 and 80 as well.
Yeah, I would just add, I traveled with Huckabee back in March in New Hampshire, and he was fantastic, and you can't underestimate.
You said it on this show.
Yeah, you can't underestimate his ability on the stump, and I think if he had more time, he'd be able to do a lot better here. But interesting, conversely, Mitt Romney, I think, did the opposite. He tried to sell himself to evangelicals in Iowa, and I think that's why he's not doing well here either. He ran a campaign as basically a theocrat instead of a technocrat. And if he'd come along and done the things and said, you know, stressed his executive experience, and not sort of overplayed his hand in Iowa with the evangelicals, I think he'd be doing a lot better.
Yeah, but the problem for Mitt Romney is Mitt Romney had to have the two-state strategy. He was not a national phenomenon. So therefore, he had to do something that no one has ever really done successfully, which is he had to show that he could win in Iowa and New Hampshire. He could get that free media bump because he won in those two beginning states, and therefore he could then project himself to be on the same level as a Giuliani, as a Fred Thompson, as a McCain.
Now,
and this was crucial, and he could spend the money to do it.
Now, Huckabee has taken a lead in, according to Real Clear Politics, a lead in South Carolina, about 6.5%. Is there life after South Carolina for Mike Huckabee? Even if he wins in South Carolina, which traditionally is the icing on the cake for a Republican candidate in recent years, where does he go next? Because he's not going to get the traditional
money support. They want to stop him.
That's right. And so that makes it even that much more difficult
when
for
I say,
him.
I mean the conservative country club.
Establishment, exactly. They're scared to death of this guy. And so that makes it, because, I mean, the knock on Huckabee was always, well, he's fun and he's popular, but, you know, he'll hit a brick wall on February 5th when all these big states come into play. So I agree. I mean, he could do very, very well in South Carolina. And, you know, Huckabee, Florida is not, Florida is a southern state. Parts of that state in the Panhandle and Central Florida are very conservative.
And he's tight with Rudy there.
He's come up in the polls there, and Rudy's...
And he's gifted. He's gifted orator. Anyone who hears him, who takes more than 2 minutes to spend some time, is absolutely mesmerized by him. And with these kinds of bumps coming out of places like South Carolina, like out of Iowa, he's going to get such free media because the media is in love with him because he's such great material.
And if there is sort of fragmented support among who's most likely to be the anti-Huckabee,
right,
you know, Giuliani or Thompson or McCain, that might give him an opportunity to keep going.
All right, let me ask this one. If Obama moves forward and ends up being the Democratic nominee, who gives him the toughest race as a Republican? Tom Bevin.
You know, interestingly, I think McCain does. And it would be so remarkable because here's this young guy who symbolizes change, and then you've got the crusty old veteran who symbolizes integrity and experience. They both pull very well to the independents and to the center of the country. So it would be a fascinating race. I think it'd be a close race, and it'd be great. Yeah.
And not only would it be a close race.
I disagree with that one.
You think it would be Clinton and Dole in 96?
I think when I see John McCain, even last night, John McCain is Bob Dole. He's the guy that's been there. You're going to give it to him. I mean, the one thing, the American voters have rejected war heroes. They reject war heroes in the general election. He's yesterday. I think he'll do well.
Bob Dole was not running
New Hampshire.
In a time of war.
He will do well in New Hampshire, but he's not going to do well the rest of the way.
He'll make Barack Obama look like a child on stage with him. If national security is the issue.
And don't forget, one of the
maybe that's not what the people are asking for. If the people are really asking for change and something new, you can't get much older than John McCain.
But the difference is you don't know what the world stage is going to look like in November of 2008. As we're going into January and February right now, I mean, even with the Benazir Bhutto thing, that actually added to the stature of a John McCain. And we're talking a lot about the economy, but, you know, months in politics is like centuries. And what happens in November could really play incredibly well for John McCain. I think the country would benefit for amazing choices.
Did Rudy Giuliani help himself at all last night? Could he end up in that surprise third spot, Dean?
That's interesting. This is something I wrote about on my blog this morning, thinking about where Rudy's been over the last few weeks, because it struck me seeing him on stage last night. You know, I thought he did a good job, but it really also underscored for me how he basically has not been part of the presidential discourse over the last few weeks. He's been basically absent.
Yeah.
I'm not the first commentator to say this, but what he really needs is a little bit of chaos. He needs lots of different winners over the next few primary contests, and then maybe he'll have an opportunity in Florida. But it's going to be tough for him, I think.
Let's go to Jeff in Greenville, South Carolina, listening to us on XM Radio. Go ahead, Jeff. You're on the air.
Hey, I was calling in wondering what do y'all think would happen if Huckabee finished outside the top three in New Hampshire in terms of Huckabee's lead in South Carolina?
Nothing. Yeah. Nothing. I mean, he's not running here. Let's be honest. The reason why he's even in the state of New Hampshire is that this is where all the media is. So he's using New Hampshire really as a free media strategy. He's not really running a campaign. He's just spending time with lots of big names who are looking not at New Hampshire but at South Carolina next. Mm-hmm. This is not in play for him. All he's going to do is exceed expectations if he does better here.
Jeff, question for you. There are more retired military people living in South Carolina than any other state. Why is it that John McCain is not a huge, successful candidate down there? What's wrong with John McCain?
Well, that's an interesting question. In the coastal areas of South Carolina is where the ex-military personnel are focused, and McCain is doing very well in those counties. Where McCain's weak is in the upstate part of South Carolina, and his campaign right now is making a push upstate to try to get the word out about McCain, and we'll just have to see what happens over the next 2 weeks, I think.
See, I think one of the problems that McCain has is that 8 years ago, he was the maverick. He was the conservative maverick. He's not the conservative maverick anymore. He's older. He's still a maverick. but especially on illegal immigration. That's a big issue in South Carolina. I think that's an albatross around his neck, and I think that last night, I think that's the thing that Romney really hit home again and again. You look down those states, that's the issue that turns Republican primary voters on. Well, and he's on the wrong side of that issue. Yeah,
and Tom Tancredo, who dropped out of the race but endorsed Romney, has said that he thinks that McCain is absolutely dangerous on the issue of immigration. So there is this, among conservatives who are concerned about immigration, McCain really takes a lot of heat.
Tom?
Well, we'll see. I mean, Mitt Romney is banging the immigration drum as hard as he can here in New Hampshire. And if he's not able to stop McCain here, you know, I don't know that he's going to necessarily be able to stop South Carolina, especially
if I don't think Romney stops him in South Carolina. The question is, the other thing is, that's one of the states where Fred Thompson's doing well. You talk about a picture that hasn't developed. He did make a point. He did make a point, however, on several newscasts today. The point is, he finished third in Iowa. I was flipping around all night. Not one commentator even mentioned his name.
Exactly.
That was a big story, or that was a story out of Iowa. Nobody gave him any cred for it. 1-800-723-8289 from coast to coast and border to border. I've got a head cold. My voice doesn't always sound like this. Waited 4 years to get sick and come to New Hampshire. Back shortly, live from Manchester.
Congratulations, you're a winner.
Winner, winner!
That's right. Drivers all over America can save hundreds of dollars on their car insurance just by switching to State Farm. In fact, we offer more discounts to more drivers than any other insurance company. Got a good driving record? Own more than one car? How about a good student in the family? You may even be eligible for a discount for insuring both your home and car with State Farm. We have so many ways to save, you can't lose. And not only will you get a great price, but you'll also get the good neighbor service that has made us America's number one insurance company. State Farm insures more than 40 million drivers, so stop gambling with other insurance companies and switch to State Farm today. Just call your local agent or visit us online at statefarm.com and start saving big today.
Like a good neighbor.
From Bakersfield, California to Hanover, New Hampshire, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. 1-800-723-8289. We're in New Hampshire, just less than 36 hours away from the First in the Nation primary. Arnie Artisan joins us. She is a longtime political activist. She served in the General Assembly, the State Assembly here. She ran for governor,
ran for Congress, mm-hmm.
and she also is one of those who was successfully moved from a career in politics to an immensely successful career in talk radio and also talk television as well. So it's always nice to have you with us. Dean Spiliotis also joins us. He is has his own blog, and he also spent many years at the University of Chicago, where he got his PhD, and he is the head of NHPoliticalCapital.com. He's taught at Dartmouth. He's taught at St. Anselm. And also with us this evening is Tom Bevan, the editor and publisher of RealClearPolitics.com. And also joining us is Ellen Ratner for this segment of the show. Ellen is with the Talk Radio News Service. She, too, is a living legend in these parts. For what you've been able to do, just the phenomenon of talk radio and the number of people that are in this city, in this state, at the moment. How are you coordinating it all?
Well, first of all, it's through Talkers Magazine, and Talkers Magazine is the industry, you know, it's kind of billboard for talk radio. So we really do have our pulse on a lot of talk show hosts, and they're great, and they're with us, and I didn't realize that we had our friends from Real Clear Politics, one of my favorite sites in the universe, with us, and hopefully they'll be with us again tomorrow afternoon. I'm having a freak out, you know, we have all these hosts here, and we're having a little rough spot in some guests tomorrow afternoon, but we'll get there. And so I think that one of the things that has been is that we did this 4 years ago, and a lot of people are really talk hosts. You know, that's all they do is politics, and this is the grand slam of politics.
Now, is because of all the publicity about the blog and the internet and bloggers, and so much of the media coverage this year has been about the bloggers, do you think talk radio is now viewed as a second-class citizen in the process? Are they treated differently than they were, let's say, 4 years ago when they were very, very hot?
Well, I think that what's happening is that there is a real situation here where there can be there is a lot of us feel that the stick in radio is going to end. That this idea that there's going to be this thing that you have to broadcast out and people get in your cars is probably going to end as soon as those little handhelds that we have, you can dial up an internet radio show and get that. I don't think talk is going to end, but the method of delivery is going to end. And in 5 or 10 years, we're going to be sitting here, and it's going to be a very different situation.
Steve Toma, who was the chief political correspondent for the McClatchy newspapers, I was talking with him yesterday. And I asked him the question about media and the new media and how it's, you know, how it's impacting on this convention. He basically said blogs are much ado about nothing, that the audiences are so small they really have no significant impact other than they have impressed the hell out of the news assignment people. Arnie, do you agree with that?
Well, I mean, they may have small audiences, but those audiences are very critical because those of us that read it, suddenly we start sharing that information in a much bigger venue. I mean, I read about 20 blogs a week, and I check in with them on a regular basis, and guess what? My audience knows exactly what's on that blog because it's coming out of my damn mouth. And even though they may never let their fingers do the walking on the internet, I'm doing that. And as a result, it does, in fact, sort of move the conversation in very different directions based on the kind of content that they're providing. So I think they're invaluable, and I think they're an incredibly useful tool. I'm not sure that the radio is going to, you know, change or devolve. I think that it just is going to be enhanced by what's happening.
Dean, you're a blogger. Is this sour grapes by a veteran print journalist?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, you have to. There are literally millions of blogs out there, and you have to kind of be a smart consumer in how you use them. But Arnie's point is well taken. I mean, it really is kind of a grassroots notion of transferring ideas and information between people, and you get this kind of network of blogs or network of websites, and you kind of move around that network, and you can stay highly informed.
Tom Bevan, it's your lifeblood.
Well, yeah, I mean, the point I would make is that I think Steve's missing the boat a little bit. I mean, the biggest shift in blogging is the fact that all of the major newspapers now have established their own blogs, where people like Adam Nagurny and Jeff Zeleny and all those folks, Dan Balls, they're all writing their standard print column for the Post, and then they're also providing additional reporting, backstory, all that stuff on blogs. I mean, it is now a great tool for veteran journalists, mainstream journalists as well.
Let's let a few more people sound off. Let's head to Fort Madison, Iowa, where Jay is listening to us on KBUR. Go ahead, Jay.
Yeah, I would consider Arnie to New Hampshire what Mike Glover is to Iowa, because he's the absolute best, and I think she really knows what she's talking about. And I couldn't enjoy it more what you're doing. I would just say I can't overstate the thrill that we had in our state as far as the way we had so many different kinds of people. We had independents, we had younger. I mean, my precinct was like double in the five times I went to it, and I couldn't believe it. And it was like you knew this was a day in history for the whole world. I mean, it was just so amazing. And like they said in the Register here today, it's thrilling for blacks, women, and other, quote, minorities, because Clinton didn't lose because she was a woman, and Obama didn't win because he was black. And in so many ways, even on the other side, too, with Romney getting his comeuppance, all the money he dumped on here didn't help. All the big names of Hillary with, the ex-governor we had, who's a great guy, and Bill. And I just want to ask Arnie, the way I know she's had a lot of good vibes what's going on in New Hampshire, but I can tell you this, from the beginning, Hillary insulted the intelligence of this state. And she thought that she could just over and over say things that just didn't even make sense, like Iran changed their behavior and Social Security doesn't really need an answer but a commission. And then Bill just dumped all this stuff like he was against Iraq from the beginning. And it just
Jay, is she right, though?
What's
is
that?
She is Hillary Clinton right, based on what she said in the debates last night? Is she right about asking for specifics from Barack Obama?
I think he's given them in a lot of town hall meetings. Like, he would take questions. Now, I know he's at these rallies now, but he gave a lot of meat on the bones, and of course Edwards did too. And I can tell you this too, among the Democratic Party, 70% of this party did not trust her at all. She is shady. She's evasive. I saw her in person.
The other night when I was watching the switching around, watching the results from Iowa, to me the most amusing thing was I was watching MSNBC for a while, and you had Keith Olbermann and you had Chris Matthews. So I really like Chris Matthews, but when it became apparent that Hillary had lost and they were getting ready for the photo op, he gave about 15 minutes of hype. You watch the Clinton machine. Boy, this machine, they really have it. You watch what they're going to manufacture right before your very eyes. So, really, he had jacked it up. Incredible. And then...
Can I say one more thing?
Yeah, in 1 second.
Okay.
But when they came back, all of a sudden, it's Bill Clinton. He never looked worse. Then surrounded by Madeleine Albright and Wesley Clark. It was the picture said, old. And then along comes Barack Obama. And this was the mastery of the media by the Clinton machine. I think they created an indelible image of that campaign that night with that photo op. Dean, your reaction?
I agree. It was interesting. It's something that initially didn't catch my attention, but I talked to a number of people after that she had given her speech, and they said, wow, that was really a problematic photo op there. We had Wes Clark and Madeleine Albright and Bill Clinton, and it looked like a changing of the guard. And I've heard that again in additional commentary today.
Jay, to you, what was your reaction?
Oh, yeah. The last thing, I saw them all. I saw, all three of them in Richardson. And Hillary did not take Q&A, of course. Like she finally did it in New Hampshire. Also, when I got up in the line and I had all these Hillary lovers around, I said, Hillary, would you get rid of corporate donations and lobbyists? And she shook her head back and forth, the body language. She goes, oh, of course I'll get rid of it. And I was like saying, Hillary, are you going to promise me in front of me and all these other people? And the last thing, the speeches for the ending speeches, you can tell Huckabee, I totally agree about Huckabee. Obama and Edwards were all about people and inspiring them. And Hillary was all about my ego, how I'm going to go the distance, how I'm ready from day one, like Obama or Edwards wouldn't be.
And then then surrounded by the Over the Hill gang. Ellen Ratner, you had a comment.
Well, I mean, I haven't had some earphones, so I haven't been privileged to the whole discussion. But I think this whole election focuses on demographics. And the fact that... that Hillary Clinton, I'll just give you an example. Yesterday there was a Lifetime Women's forum here at the hotel, and there was, everybody knows that Lifetime's demographic is the soccer mom, so you're looking at 28 to maybe 43, 45 years old. So she sends Ann Lewis to speak for her, who's almost 70. Now, you know, I mean, I just wanted to throw up. I mean, Ann Lewis is a great person. She's a great spokesperson. But it's not who you send to the Lifetime crowd. How did they do that kind of mismatch?
They're playing with an old Rolodex.
Yeah, another way of looking at the results in Iowa, though, is that authenticity was what voters wanted and what won. Hillary spent $7 million to try and repackage herself as an agent of change. People voted for Obama instead because he's the real deal in that regard, or they think he's the real deal. Mitt Romney came in and spent $7 million to repackage himself as a social conservative. They voted for Huckabee because he's the real deal, and voters can tell.
And let's not forget, 60% of the caucus goers this time were new to a caucus. This was a virgin event for them. And the fact that someone could introduce them and bring them in to sit around for 2 or 3 hours in a very public setting to support a candidate, it's not a vote. This is so much more difficult and challenging. And yet whatever Barack did, he really invited them in.
We've got to pause. I know you've got a reaction to that, Bevan. 1-800-723-8289. From coast to coast and border to border, I'm Bruce Dumont, live tonight from Manchester, New Hampshire. When we come back, we're going to hear from Congressman Peter King, Republican of New York.
Outside the soon-to-be-completed Museum of Broadcast Communications.
Psst. Hey, you.
Who, me?
Yeah. What are you looking at?
I'm looking at a beautiful new building.
Get it right. You're looking at me. I'm the beautiful new Museum of Broadcast Communications.
A talking building?
No, a talking horse.
Hello.
Yes, I'm a talking building. I communicate. And I need some money.
I don't know if I have any spare change on me.
I get it. Here, look inside this door.
Here's Johnny.
Wow.
You think that's something? Look at this.
Bozo's Circus is on the air.
Boy, that's something.
You see, weren't those shows important to you?
Sure.
Well, if you donate just a couple of shekels, I could open my doors to show you the entire history of broadcasting.
Everything?
I'm brand spanking new, kid, but I'm a few bricks shy of a full house, so I need you to donate. I need your help.
You need help? I'm talking to a building.
The brand new Museum of Broadcast Communications needs your help. Go to museum.tv and help bring the history of broadcasting to life.
We'll be right back. From Phoenix, Arizona to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Stand by, Myrtle Beach. The political spotlight's heading towards you very, very soon. Tom Bevan, you were going to tell, you were at one of the caucuses the other night.
Yeah, I just want to give a quick anecdotal story. I did. I went to a caucus in West Des Moines, and I talked to the caucus chairman there. I showed up about 30 minutes before time beforehand, and I said, how many voters did you have, caucus goers, did you have at this location in 2004? He said 108. And I said, what would you consider a remarkable turnout this year? And he said 125. And at 7 o'clock when they had to close the door, the line was still snaking out the hallway. They had 224 people there. It was unbelievable. He was stunned and speechless.
Yeah. You talk about snaking out of the hallway. Last night, I was at the ABC Facebook debate, and it was an incredible turnout, obviously, as it always is when media. And in the spin room and in the media room, there were politicians hanging around waiting to be interviewed. One was Peter King, longtime friend of Rudy Giuliani, and this is what he had to say.
Congressman Peter King, Republican of New York. Congressman, a lot of the political insiders are wondering about the wisdom of Rudy Giuliani's strategy to wait until February 5th and also to Florida, basically low-keying it in Iowa and New Hampshire. What's your take on it as of this moment?
Well, Rudy is a national candidate, and he doesn't have unlimited funds, but he's the only candidate who has support in all parts of the country. And so Mike Huckabee focused on Iowa. John McCain has virtually lived in New Hampshire for the last month. And Mitt Romney has spent all his time in Iowa and New Hampshire while Rudy has been going around the country. And there's no doubt the stories this week are going to be about Mike Huckabee and Barack Obama and then probably John McCain. But the one constant, the one candidate who keeps going is Rudy Giuliani. And when we do hit the delegate-rich primaries at the end of this month and the beginning of next month, January 29th and February 5th, that's when the Giuliani strength is going to show. So when we come back here, you and I are talking 4 or 5 weeks from now, you'll be saying, God, Giuliani's people really had a great strategy.
There have been reports that money is slowing down. Is that true?
No. In fact, I think in the you'll see in this quarter, the fourth quarter, Rudy will probably have reported, will report raising more money than any of the other candidates, except maybe for Ron Paul. But he will have raised the most money, and he's using that money effectively. He's not putting it into areas where he doesn't feel he has strength, but he's putting a lot of money into Florida, a lot of money into Missouri, the other February 5th states. And he's making the effort here in New Hampshire, not to win. He'd like to win, but he's not going to. But he's doing it to make it showing to let people know that he is a national candidate.
One last question. In looking at the recent media coverage, a local New York media story can instantly become a national media story.
Right.
Why is it, at least from afar, it appears that the New York local media is ganging up on Rudy already? They're loaded for bear. Why is it?
The New York media loves to devour its own. The New York media had an adversary relationship with Rudy Giuliani when he was mayor, and they have a history of going after Rudy. Now Rudy can give it as well as he takes it, and I think in the fullness of time, you know, the national media and the people across the nation will realize that. No, but there's no doubt they've taken some shots at him. Usually the stories end up a few weeks later being either rewritten or revised. But by then the damage is done. Having said that, that's the business Rudy is in. He realizes that. And so he's not surprised by it. I'm a little disappointed, but, you know, Rudy's pretty tough. He can handle it.
You've known Rudy for a long time. What is the one attribute of Rudy Giuliani that you think the rest of the public doesn't know yet?
I don't think they realize the full extent of his guts and his commitment that when he says something, when he makes a decision, he will stand by it no matter what. And I think even people who say, yeah, he's basically a good guy, or I basically agree with him, they won't realize until he's president just how much he means what he says. Once he makes a commitment, he's going to follow through no matter what, and he will not back down to special interests or to the media or to other politicians.
Congressman Peter King, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Dean, when you look at the Giuliani strategy, is it the right strategy? You think he made a mistake, or is it too Too early to tell.
I think it's too early to tell. I do think it's a high-risk strategy. It's something I've said all along because it's predicated on the idea that all of this takes place in a vacuum and that there isn't any momentum being gained by other candidates. And there's a possibility that if multiple candidates win, he may have an opening. But if either Huckabee or McCain win several contests, they're going to have a lot of momentum, and I think it may be a little problematic for him.
You have been consistent. You're not a big Rudy fan.
No, not, I like Rudy fine.
This the right strategy?
Well, quite frankly, it was his only strategy.
And Al Gore didn't compete.
And the other
in
thing
Iowa
is, look,
either.
Rudy did not want to have to vacate New Hampshire. He spent just a couple months ago. He dumped about $3 million here, and his poll numbers were flat to down. So he really, he tried to make a play here. It didn't work out for him. So he had to retreat to Florida. And the only thing that's keeping him in this ball game is that it is remaining, at least for now, sort of a three-way, four-way scrum. The field's still divided. He's got a pocket of delegates that he can pick up in these winner-take-all states like New Jersey, California, which the Giuliani campaign has always maintained are momentum-proof, and other campaigns obviously scoff at that, but we'll wait and see. I mean, the way things are working out for him, he's still viable.
Arnie?
I actually think it's for him, it was, as you said, the only strategy. And let's be honest, he doesn't have to say, he doesn't provide excuses. Why'd I lose in Iowa? Why'd I lose in New Hampshire? I didn't play there, honey. So you know what? It's not a loss. It's just not a show up. And that's a strategy for his national one on Super Tuesday.
And part of that that $3 million buy, extensive television advertising, at least all the ads that I've seen, all with a war on terrorism, September 11th, Islamic fascist jihad as the core of his constituency. And based on what he said the other night in the debate, he's not backing away from that strategy at all. Arnie Arneson has joined us in hour number one, one of the leading political talk show hosts as well as a political operative here in the great state of New Hampshire. Dean Spiliotis also joins us. He is a blogger, and his blog is nhpoliticalcapital.com. And our good friend from back home in Chicago, Tom Bevan, of RealClearPolitics.com joins us as well. Live from Manchester, New Hampshire, I'm Bruce Dumont. Got another full hour coming up. Don't go away. Back more live from Manchester, New Hampshire.
This is nice.
Go ahead. Take a deep breath. Yeah, there's nothing like that new car insurance smell.
I love it.
Of course you do. Want to take it for a test drive?
Sure.
Wouldn't it be great if you could test drive car insurance? Well, maybe you can.
Notice all the impressive standard features. Good neighbor service for extra comfort and stability. And look how great it handles around those hairpin turns in your budget.
Check out the company 40 million other drivers trust, State Farm. No one gives more discounts to more drivers, and nobody takes care of you like a State Farm agent.
Who's that?
That's your built-in security system, your very own State Farm agent.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Hey there, and who are those guys?
Oh, that's your award-winning claims department. We're talking high performance.
Wow, I'll take it.
So talk to a State Farm agent today and kick the tires on our car insurance. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Outside the soon-to-be-completed Museum of Broadcast Communications.
Psst, hey you.
Who, me?
Yeah. What are you looking at?
I'm looking at a beautiful new building.
Get it right. You're looking at me. I'm the beautiful new Museum of Broadcast Communications.
A talking building?
No, a talking horse.
Hello.
Yes, I'm a talking building. I communicate, and I need some money.
I don't know if I have any spare change on me.
I get it. Here, look inside this door.
Here's Johnny.
Wow.
You think that's something? Look at this.
Bozo's Circus is on the air.
Boy, that's something.
You see, weren't those shows important to you?
Sure.
Well, if you donate just a couple of shekels, I could open my doors to show you the entire history of broadcasting.
Everything?
I'm brand spanking new, kid, but I'm a few bricks shy of a full house, so I need you to donate. I need your help.
You need help? I'm talking to a building.
The brand new Museum of Broadcast Communications needs your help. Go to museum.tv and help bring the history of broadcasting to life.
When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-449-1415. For a one-time professional fee, American Tax Relief can get you the second chance you've never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-449-1415. That's 1-800-449-1415. Live from Manchester, New Hampshire, we continue with hour number two of Beyond the Beltway. Thank you very much for joining us tonight with our special guests, Arnie Arneson, one of New Hampshire's leading political operators, as well as media mavens. Dean Spiliotis also. Live from Manchester, New Hampshire, we continue with hour number two of Beyond the Beltway. Thank you very much for joining us tonight with our special guests, Arnie Arneson, one of New Hampshire's leading political operators, as well as media mavens. Dean Spiliotis also joins us as media mavens. Dean Spiliotis also joins us. He is with NHPoliticalCapital.com. And Tom Bevan of RealClearPolitics.com joins us for another couple of minutes. He's got to get on to prepare for his blog and his site tomorrow. Tom, as you leave, as we generally ask you, make your prediction. We're going to save it. We're going to put it in the time capsule. We'll play it next week.
Fantastic.
Is this an easier prediction than the one you made when you were last on the show?
Yeah, I think it's easier than Iowa, certainly. I mean, all the indicators are flashing green for Obama and McCain. I mean, I just don't know that, I don't know that Romney's going to be able to turn it around and retake the lead over him, and certainly... You know, Obama has all the marks of a winner for second.
In your view, mm-hmm. right now, mm-hmm. is Barack Obama the Democratic nominee for president?
I think he's certainly the front runner. I mean, look, this is a long race. This could turn into Hart Mondale, and we could see Clinton still has a ton of money, big organization, a lot of institutional backing, and I mean, so far though. I think the story is Obama's had the muscle to compete, and we'll see if he can sustain that through what is going to be a grueling schedule.
Hart never had that.
Well, and remember also that the Democratic delegates are proportional, which, will, I think, help Hillary in the end.
Arnie Arneson, you have predicted a blowout in New Hampshire for Barack Obama.
But that does not knock out Hillary Clinton. This is an amazing candidate. She is well-financed. She is well-organized. Remember, she is the incumbent in this race, everyone. Everyone keeps talking like somehow this is a new thing for them. This is not. They have run this machine once in 92. They've run it again in 96. They plan on doing it again in 2008. Do not underestimate the Clintons. Don't.
Dean Spiliotis.
Yeah, and we've never had a schedule like this before. So in a sense, they're all guinea pigs because we don't actually know what that. We've been speculating for a year now on what this front loading means for campaign strategy, and we just don't know for sure. But he certainly, if he wins big on Tuesday, sure, he'll be the presumptive front runner going into early February.
And let's remember too that one of the comments made about Barack Obama is that while he might have been the change agent, that he was a newbie at politics. That politics is a long distance runner. You know, your gain in muscle. You know, Hillary Clinton has been doing this since she was in utero. The problem with Barack Obama is that this is a whole new concept for him. What he was able to show was that he is a quick study man. I mean, not only is he the magic in this race, but he learned the politics of this race. He's organized down to every single detail. It has to be an envy of anyone who wants to run for president. So that's part of the problem. And if it turns out that it's a blowout in New Hampshire, then Iowa wasn't a blip. Then what happens is he took that organization from there, brought it here. He can then move it out beyond here. That's the one asset that Hillary Clinton had. That's why she was inevitable, because she understood the political game. Well, guess what? So does Barack Obama.
You have black political leaders, or at least a couple in the South, who believe you've got to go, Tom Bevan. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks so much.
We'll see you back in Chicago.
Okay.
You have black political leaders in the South who have said publicly they do not think that Barack Obama will have significant appeal to white constituents in the South. Do the results from Iowa, a state with very few African Americans, does that completely change the dynamic of the South? And is the Southern white voter different than the Iowa or New Hampshire white voter?
That's an excellent question. I mean, I do think, if you think about it, both Iowa and New Hampshire are about 96% white. So that in itself, if he were to win both the caucus and the primary, that would be a remarkable statement about his broad appeal. You're going to get a very large African-American vote for him in the South, which will help balance things out a little bit. And I think there is an opportunity to win over some of the Southern white vote. But we'll have to, you know, we'll get a good gauge for that in the South Carolina primary.
Does, by the way, speaking of South Carolina, let's head there right now. Spartanburg, South Carolina. Vincent is listening to us on XM Radio tonight. Go ahead, Vincent.
Hey, how you guys doing tonight?
Very good. Nice to hear from you.
I'm calling because I wanted to discuss the immigration issue. I was watching the debate last night and with the Republican debate, and it seemed like, you know, John McCain has this amnesty issue as Achilles' heel. But it sounded like you really tried to explain it away last night so that, you know, the American people would understand that his plan is not amnesty. And it looked like Giuliani and Huckabee agreed with him. And then Romney, who appears to have called it amnesty, agreed that it wasn't amnesty. Do you think John McCain will ever be able to overcome this whole amnesty issue to end up winning the election?
Arnie?
Well, I think just what you just said was Huckabee and Giuliani were kind of agreeing with McCain that it was an amnesty. So the problem is, where are you going to go? I mean, where are you going to go? I mean, I don't think Mitt Romney's going to make it out of New Hampshire. He may continue, but you know, he may be your last shot here. And the three major candidates, a Huckabee candidate, a Giuliani candidate, and a McCain candidate, aren't going that way. What they're saying is, yes, we're going to secure the borders, and yes, we're going to figure out some way of moving people on a glide path towards legalization. But you know what? The Mitt Romney movement ain't passing through New Hampshire.
I was startled by Rudy Giuliani's comment last night when he said, Ronald Reagan was for amnesty, this savior of our party. I mean, it seems to me that just with that statement, he gave...
He inoculated everyone. Yeah. He inoculated everyone. That's so important.
Right.
It doesn't seem like the Republican voter... I mean, is the Republican voter going to ever realize that this immigration issue is not what it's been made out to be? And I think that would really boost McCain in the end, especially in South Carolina.
What about your colleagues? You're calling from South Carolina. Tell us about how the people are thinking down there. And let me ask this question, because it's based on what I've heard people in New Hampshire say. They're torn. They don't know whether they're going to vote for McCain or whether they're going to vote for Obama. They're torn as to what primary they're going to go into.
Well, I mean, I think that immigration is a large issue in South Carolina, and you know, I think that the people just need to understand the issue because, quite frankly, I don't think most of America understands this whole amnesty and immigration issue. It's kind of like health care sometimes, but doesn't exactly hit home like health care. I think that the religious faith will be a big part of South Carolina, and it's going to play well into Huckabee. But you know. Ultimately, with immigration, the process that we have right now, McCain hit on the fact that it is de facto amnesty if we don't do anything. And furthermore, I think that, you know, in South Carolina, it will be interesting to see what Fred Thompson ultimately does. And if he endorses McCain, what kind of a bump that will give.
Yeah, that'll be one state. We're going to move on. Let's go to Ed in Chicago on WLS. Go ahead. You got a minute. Go ahead, Ed.
Yes, great show.
Thank you.
Mr. Richardson was talking about... 1 year service in the military, because I think American society is very lazy, that they don't research candidates, they go with the media goes by, and this fascination with Obama, who talks in generalities, I don't know what's going on. I mean, people really need to do their homework, because Biden and Richardson and Dodd are better candidates than Barack Obama.
Well, they're better candidates, but it is the voter that decides that, not you, me, or anyone else around the table. And 50 states are going to decide it eventually. Thank you very much for your call. Nice to hear from you. 1-800-259-9231. 723-8029 from coast to coast and border to border. I'm Bruce Dumont. When we come back, we'll be joined by Juan Williams of NPR and Fox News.
Mmm, this is nice.
Go ahead, take a deep breath.
Mmm.
Yeah, there's nothing like that new car insurance smell.
I love it.
Of course you do. Want to take it for a test drive?
Sure.
Wouldn't it be great if you could test drive car insurance? Well, maybe you can.
Notice all the impressive standard features. Good neighbor service for extra comfort and stability. And look how great it handles around those hairpin turns in your budget.
Check out the company 40 million other drivers trust, State Farm. No one gives more discounts to more drivers, and nobody takes care of you like a State Farm agent.
Who's that?
That's your built-in security system, your very own State Farm agent.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Hey there, and who are those guys?
Oh, that's your award-winning claims department. We're talking high performance.
Wow, I'll take it.
So talk to a State Farm agent today and kick the tires on our car insurance. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
From Wilmington, North Carolina to Eureka, California, you are listening to Beyond the Beltway. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. We're coming to you live from Manchester, New Hampshire. The Talk Radio News Service has put up a phenomenal radio row. They've got scores of talk show hosts from all over the United States getting ready to do their broadcast, and some executives from POTUS, XM Radio. A lot of our callers tonight coming to you on Channel 130 on POTUS. Nice to hear from them tonight as well. Joining us right now is one of the country's leading political commentators, Juan Williams from NPR and Fox News. Are you there? Well, that doesn't sound good. That doesn't sound like the Juan Williams
Come on,
I know.
Your voice. What happened, honey?
So we're gonna reconnect with that. And while we're Juan, are you there?
I'm right here, Bruce.
Okay, you sound much better now than you did 10 seconds ago. Juan, I want to get your reaction. Thus far in this campaign, at least it seems to me, there has not been a lot of discussion of race. Do you agree with that? And when do you think that issue will come to the fore for discussion?
You know, it's interesting because it has been a point of discussion by innuendo and by indirection, if you will, Bruce. obviously, with Barack Obama winning Iowa, it was an incredible moment in terms of racial history in the United States that a black man could win in a state that's more than 90% white. And not only that, but it's such a significant caucus, it being the first really vote of the 2008 presidential cycle and really one that drives media attention. He has already set records in terms of fundraising for any black candidate. All of that is a tremendous racial story. And yet people haven't been talking about it in specific terms of race because Obama really doesn't want to talk about race. He makes a point of avoiding the subject. I saw him today at a campaign event here in New Hampshire, and he talked about, you know, get ready for the attacks, the phone calls, and what should I say, do you notice that guy Obama has a funny name, he has a Muslim father. But he never says, and hey, that guy Obama is black. He didn't play that card, given that, again, New Hampshire is an overwhelmingly white state. So that topic about his singular achievement as a black man in America really is something that's left to commentators like me and you to discuss, but he's not bringing it up, and therefore it's not becoming part of the conversation.
Early in the campaign, there was discussion within the black community, some of it spilled over into the general community, about whether Barack Obama was black enough. And it was Michelle Obama who seemed to get her back up and really come back with one of the best responses to that. Is that a discussion that is a past discussion in the African-American community?
No, you know, what is the problem there is, Bruce, and I want you to remind me exactly what Michelle said because I might want to use it later.
Okay.
But the problem persists to this extent. You still see people like Andrew Young who said some really crazy things about how, you know, he thought Bill Clinton had been with more black women than Barack Obama and that, you know, Bill Clinton and Hillary
Clinton.
Well,
that may be true.
Yeah, that Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton are really representing the black community. I mean, you know, I think that there's resentment towards the idea that Obama didn't come up through the black political machine, that he didn't come up through the civil rights movement, that he didn't come up through the black church and the black pulpit, and so, therefore, he's not black enough. And then, of course, what plays into this is, of course, his mother is a white woman, so he's biracial. I've had people complain to me in terms of my reporting on Fox and on National Public Radio. They say, hey, why do you call him the black candidate? He's biracial. And, you know, and of course, the history of this country, if you have one drop of black blood, you're black. But suddenly, he's biracial. And I think a lot of the older black community, because he didn't come up through the normal route that they are accustomed to, they say, who is this guy? And is he really black? And so that conversation has been muted to some extent by his success, but it hasn't gone away.
Arnie Arneson has a question or comment.
Well, you know, Juan, this is, I heard Michelle Obama speak when she first came to New Hampshire many, many months ago, and I was hearing that comment that, you know, Obama's not black enough. After hearing Michelle talk about who she was and where she came from and about their relationship, I turned to a reporter sitting next to me and I said, well, you know what, honey? Michelle Obama's black enough. So, I mean, I think it's really important that we do this. And the other thing that drives me crazy is if Barack Obama doesn't play the color card, the black card, Hillary Clinton plays the girl card over and over and over again. And you know what? I think it's kind of refreshing to say, you know, Hillary, I know you're a girl. You know, Barack Obama, I know you're black. You don't have to tell me. We know it. We're processing it. That's not why you're running. You're not running because of the color of your skin. You're running because of the vision.
Is early in the campaign, Bill Clinton, because he described, you know, it has been described as the first black president because of his long-term association with black leaders around the country, he clearly was turning the screws to keep a lot from jumping on the Obama bandwagon. Are we at a point in the campaign where those black leaders are going to say, you know what, this is a pressure I can't withstand?
Well, already what you see after the Iowa victory was a number of people who are high up in the Obama campaign beginning to deliver just that message, Bruce, to people such as John Lewis, the congressman, famous civil rights activist, to people like Andy Young, who we just discussed, to say, hey, listen, Obama is coming. He's gaining momentum. You don't want to end up on the wrong side of history. But so far, I haven't seen any major changes of heart. I've seen some people say, you know, they're going to endorse Obama. Doug Wilder, who was the first black governor since Reconstruction, governor of Commonwealth of Virginia, as you know, he recently endorsed Obama. That was a late endorsement, though. You didn't see this early, and I don't think you're going to see many of the switches, but the pressure is coming from the Obama campaign to make it out that those older sort of, you know, caught in their own habits, older black civil rights leaders, older black politicians, are the ones who are the problem, not him, and they're the oddballs, not him. He wants to do that before South Carolina because he wants to be on the offensive and win the black vote, which is, you know, is about half of the Democratic vote in the primary in South Carolina. He wants to make sure he wins that state.
Dean Spiliotis is with us in studio here in Manchester. A question for you, Dean. You know, one of the trouble spots of the world right now is Kenya. That's where Barack Obama was born. Is there an opportunity for a sitting United States senator?
No, Bruce, he wasn't born in Kenya.
His father was Kenyan, I'm sorry. His father was Kenyan. My question is there, because of that relationship, is there any special role that he could play in trying to resolve that issue that would give him some international cred, or is that too much of a gamble?
You mean to try to do something now, right, at the moment?
As a United States senator.
Perhaps. I'm not sure how much he wants to detour into that at this moment, given the momentum that he has here and the movement of the campaign.
Too much of a gamble, Juan?
Well, too much of a gamble to do what, Bruce?
Well, I mean, to try to use his influence as a U.S. senator to try to somehow bring calm to the situation in Kenya. Is there a role for him to play as sort of a sample?
I don't think it would be a risk. I think that would be a brilliant move. But let me just tell you, the guy is obviously preoccupied.
Right.
So that's the problem. But you're right. I mean, what an opportunity on the international stage. Right. I think it would make him out to be a statesman of the first rank.
Right. Let's go to Marianne listening to us in Arcadia, California on KGOE. Go ahead.
Yes, no, it is Arcadia. I think Arcadia.
I'm sorry.
Is way down the
south. That's right, Arcadia. I'm sorry.
Okay. So anyway, yes, I was watching the debates last night from New Hampshire, and I was curious about this popularity of Senator McCain. I think he just used a couple of cliches like, "Oh, when I'm president, I'm going to do what's good for the American people," and that the surge is working in Iraq, and I listened to the generals, but. Last summer, he voted against both of Senator Jim Webb's member amendments to the Department of Defense's appropriations bill, and those amendments would extend downtime for returning combat soldiers from Iraq to 12 months, I believe. And so I don't quite understand. He doesn't want to give that reprieve to the returning soldiers, and yet he wants to be president.
To what degree is the modicum of success in the wake of the surge, which is obviously Barack Obama said not good enough. Hillary Clinton said the same thing. But without the apparent surge success, would we be talking about John McCain on the verge of winning the New Hampshire primary?
Are you asking me or your panel?
I'm going to ask Juan. And, all right, go ahead, caller. Go ahead, Marianne. What's your answer?
No, I don't think that is. I think that if they want to have success there, they have to have a proper army. And we're short of volunteers. We have a volunteer army. Here is a Goliath of a country. Our United States with 300 million people, and we go in and invade the David of little Iraq with 27 million people.
I want to get Arnie's response. Is the moderate success of the surge the reason why he's still
Absolutely.
Made the comeback?
There is no question. I think what's happening with at least the appearance of success in Iraq has helped him. The other thing is that sadly, the assassination of Benazir Bhutto has also helped him. And if you're concerned about the instability on the world stage, he does present gravitas. He does exhibit leadership, and he has that foreign policy experience, and nobody else on that stage does.
Dean?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you look at the polling of independents here in New Hampshire, they were been primarily motivated by their unhappiness with the Iraq War. Now that casualties have been reduced and there has been some military success, they've started to focus on other issues. That's helped him.
Juan Williams, listen, thank you very much for joining us on Beyond the Beltway this evening. Hopefully we'll touch base between now and Election Day, and it was nice to see you again last night at the big
Always
debate.
Always a pleasure, Bruce. Thank you for the invitation.
Thanks very much. Juan Williams from NPR at Fox News. We will be back with more conversation, more calls at 1-800-723-8289 tonight, live from Manchester, New Hampshire.
Mmm, this is nice.
Go ahead, take a deep breath.
Mmm.
Yeah, there's nothing like that new car insurance smell.
I love it.
Of course you do. Want to take it for a test drive?
Sure.
Wouldn't it be great if you could test drive car insurance? Well, maybe you can.
Notice all the impressive standard features. Good neighbor service for extra comfort and stability. And look how great it handles around those hairpin turns in your budget.
Check out the company 40 million other drivers trust, State Farm. No one gives more discounts to more drivers, and nobody takes care of you like a State Farm agent.
Who's that?
That's your built-in security system, your very own State Farm agent.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Hey there, and who are those guys?
Oh, that's your award-winning claims department. We're talking high performance.
Wow, I'll take it.
So talk to a State Farm agent today and kick the tires on our car insurance. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
From Seattle, Washington to New London, New Hampshire, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289. Also, by the way, the Talk Radio News Service and Talkers Magazine and WGIR Radio in Manchester, and also WNTK, the great Bob Vinokur, one of America's great broadcasters, really putting this whole shebang together for talk show hosts all over the country. And it's hard to believe it was back in 1992 that I first met Bob Vinokur when I was here covering that primary, and put me on there in the 1992, so we've been through many election cycles. So, Bob, we thank you very much for your support. Arnie Artisan is also here. She was introduced to me by the great Bob Vinokur. And Arnie is one of the leading political operatives in the state of New Hampshire. She was in the General Assembly, State Assembly. She ran for governor against Steve Merrill. And she also ran for Congress. And she also is a great star in her own right as a political talk show host and television host. And really, when you talk about New Hampshire politics, you're right at the list, not only alphabetically, but it's great to have you with us tonight. Dean Spiliotis also joins us. He knows a thing or two as well. He writes nhpoliticalcapital.com. He has taught at Dartmouth College in Hanover, New Hampshire. In fact, he was on the ill-fated show that we did. We thought it was a great idea to do a live remote from the New Hampshire primary, and we did the show from Dartmouth College. What we didn't know was the night that we planned the remote, Dave Matthews was going to be on campus. So, as I recall, we didn't play to a big, large studio audience.
It was an intimate gathering.
It was a small, small crowd, and I really disliked Dave Matthews ever since. Also joining us now is Ari Richter. He is the managing editor and chief blogger for the Concord Monitor, which is headed by our good friend Mike Pride. Ari, thank you very much for joining us on Beyond the Beltway.
Sure, happy to be here.
What is the issue that's moving emotions right now in New Hampshire, in your view?
Oh, I don't know that it's any different from what we seem to be seeing all over right now. You know, our first day of full day of campaigning here, every single candidate mentioned the word change. It means different things to different ones, but that does seem to be the sentiment that right now runs the strongest.
Bill Clinton has been critical of the media because he thinks they're giving Barack Obama a pass. As a journalist, is there any truth to that, in your view?
Is this where I mentioned that our newspaper endorsed Clinton?
And
I was going to do it if you didn't, Ari.
I was going to bring it up.
You know, I think that the strength, you know, one of the things that happens over the course of a campaign is anybody who gets to the top gets tested. And it's probably true that the long arc of the campaign has seen its times when there's been more critical press written about the Clintons than about Obama, but I suspect that these things even out over time, particularly if he keeps winning.
Dean, what do you think? Has he gotten a pass?
I mean, I think as we go along, if he's not being tested now and not being vetted now, he certainly will be in the new future. I don't really think so. I think, you know, oftentimes claiming that another candidate or a rival candidate is getting preferential treatment is in itself a political strategy the campaigns use. So we hear that every 4 years.
Can I have a little reality therapy here? Can I remember this is the Clintons? I mean, there's more baggage with them. She's running on her record. She's running on achievement. She's using Bill Clinton's record of the 1990s. If there's a lot written about Hillary and Bill Clinton, that's because there is a lot written about Bill and Hillary Clinton. You are talking about someone who doesn't have an incredible political portfolio. That's part of the reason why he's able to pack change. So I think, you know, yes, there'll be more vetting of this Barack Obama, but it's because in part Hillary Clinton invited this attention because she wanted to talk about her gravitas, her experience, and her record.
Ari, you mentioned that the Concord Monitor endorsed Hillary Clinton. Was that an easy call for the paper?
No, it was not at all. In fact, Mike Pride wrote a column about how we were very torn between Senator Obama and Senator Clinton.
Let's go to Atlanta, Georgia, where Michael is listening to us on XM Radio on Line 8. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi, everybody. How are we doing this morning?
We're doing fine. Go ahead.
Great. I had a question about independents. I know that the independents are coming out for Obama and for McCain in New Hampshire, and I just wondered if both Obama and McCain in New Hampshire, how do you think the independents will vote in South Carolina? Will they go after the Republicans early on, or will they vote for Obama?
Well, in South Carolina, don't they vote on different days?
South Carolina, they're going to be voting a couple Saturdays from now, and the Republicans
right
the week after for the Democrats.
Any comment on that? Anybody?
Yeah, I'm not as familiar with kind of the internal dynamics of independence in South Carolina, but it's certainly the case here that there is some overlap between the independence that McCain is drawing and that Obama is drawing. But right now, from the data we've seen, 2-1, they've suggested that they're likely to vote in the Democratic race, and I think that's been driven by his success in Iowa.
And we also have the new voters, right, Ari? I mean, again, we have same-day registration. We're hearing that the Secretary of State is predicting close to 500,000 voters. There could be a lot of wild cards here because everyone's looking at, you know, people that are registered, and the question is, I know that there was an objective to bring in 10,000 single women to come into the voting booth for the first time on Tuesday. I don't know if they were successful or not. I'm sure Hillary Clinton hopes they were. But now the question is, would those 10,000 single women actually vote for her? Because we're actually noticing that Barack Obama got 35% of the female vote in Iowa. God help him if he does the same thing in New Hampshire.
Yeah, I couldn't hear the caller's question, but if we're talking about turnout, I would say that if you know, New Hampshire's turnout is always very strong, and it always involves a lot of new people. So I would expect that there's no reason that we wouldn't see that here.
How blue is New Hampshire becoming, in your view, Ari?
I might have a different answer than Arnie on that, but I think it's if for the sake of coloring things, it's bluer than it was. But
sure.
You know, Senator Obama is the one who says you know he doesn't want to pit red states against blue states, and if he wins here, he wouldn't want to call that. He wouldn't want to say that's just because we're turning blue, I'm sure.
And I
it's
also
purple.
Think, well, it is, well, no, it's not purple. It's definitely a blue state. But, I mean, you can thank George Bush for that. Nothing changed in New Hampshire, really. No one really rejected the Republican leadership at the state level. This was really a reaction to the war and to a deflated Republican Party as a result of George Bush. So what color we are as a state, I think, will only be played out after we move beyond the failure of the Bush administration.
Ari, listen, thank you very much for joining us. That's Ari Richter. He is the managing editor-in-chief blogger for the Concord Monitor. We thank him very much for joining us. Stepping before our microphones now is the difficult task of being a candidate's wife. Elizabeth Kucinich joins us. Elizabeth, thank you very much for being with us.
It's a wonderful opportunity to be a candidate's wife. It's not difficult at all.
So you liked it?
I love it.
The intrusion in your life was not anything that caused you to think twice about why Dennis did it.
We're really standing with integrity for the positions that are very important to us and that we believe are really important to America and also the world. So, no, we'll put up with that.
How did you get the news that Dennis was not going to be included in the debate last night on ABC? Because he had not reached a threshold in Iowa.
We heard confirmed the day before yesterday, and we filed a lawsuit against them. The criteria for the percentage for Dennis's polling in New Hampshire, Dennis fulfilled. And I think that really the people of New Hampshire need to take a liberty at the idea that the voters in Iowa should have an influence as to what the process in New Hampshire is going to be. They're separate states, and New Hampshire has to decide for New Hampshire.
What was it about the way in which the campaign was conducted in Iowa? Why didn't you do better in Iowa?
We didn't play in Iowa. We're playing in New
Not
Hampshire.
At all.
Not at all. We had a skeleton staff there who mobilized a grassroots effort, but it was very clear very early on that the Democratic Party had the politics stitched up. Dennis was excluded from two debates in Iowa. He was excluded from many political party events. What we did get into, we had to really fight to get into, and we just looked at that and just said, New Hampshire went under a mini revolution in 2006, particularly in the primary process, and then we saw it in the general. By turning over, you know, the congressional seats. And so we came here and we said, this is our primary state. New Hampshire is our first state that we're playing in seriously. And that is why Dennis did what he did in saying that on the second ballot that his voters should support somebody else. But that was in Iowa only.
I said a couple of weeks ago on this program that when you look at sort of the reaction to crowds, certainly the tremendous reaction he got at the Democratic Labor debate at Soldier Field in Chicago, where people were bouncing off the walls. He was clearly
people.
The star.
Clearly.
He had a better day than the Chicago Bears at any point this year.
But what happens, because he
fires up the crowd. Ron Paul, on the other side, fires up the crowd. But when it comes time to vote, it doesn't happen. Why not?
I think that people, particularly on the Democratic side, feel that they have to play political consultant games and political analyst games and hedge their bets as to who's going to win, as opposed to voting for what it is that they want. And when you look at where the Democratic base is, they're for ending the war in Iraq immediately. They're for a universal single-payer, not-for-profit healthcare system, which gets the insurance companies out of the business of providing healthcare, because we all know they make money not providing it. Cancelling NAFTA and having trade that's based on workers' rights, human rights, and environmental quality principles. All of these different areas. Oh, against the Patriot Act. All of these different areas. Dennis is the only one who stands on those positions. We need voters to vote with integrity for what they want. Otherwise, they will never get it.
But there'll be opportunities in the future, but obviously it's going to be tough to get in debates.
Well, it's up to the voters to decide.
Elizabeth Gusinich has been our guest. Thank you very much for joining us on this segment of our broadcast, coming to you live from Manchester. When we come back, we'll be joined by one of the country's leading political analysts, Michael Barone of Fox News and U.S. News and World Report, live from Manchester, New Hampshire, taking America's political pulse. I'm Bruce Dumont.
Outside the soon-to-be-completed Museum of Broadcast Communications.
Psst. Hey, you.
Who, me?
Yeah. What are you looking at?
I'm looking at a beautiful new building.
Get it right. You're looking at me. I'm the beautiful new Museum of Broadcast Communications.
A talking building?
No, a talking horse.
Hello.
Yes, I'm a talking building. I communicate. And I need some money.
I don't know if I have any spare change on me.
I get it. Here, look inside this door.
Here's Johnny.
Wow.
You think that's something? Look at this.
Bozo's Circus is on the air.
Boy, that's something.
You see, weren't those shows important to you?
Sure.
Well, if you donate just a couple of shekels, I could open my doors to show you the entire history of broadcasting.
Everything?
I'm brand spanking new kid, but I'm a few bricks shy of a full house, so I need you to donate. I need your help.
You need help? I'm talking to a building.
The brand new Museum of Broadcast Communications needs your help. Go to museum.tv and help bring the history of broadcasting to life.
From Wilmington, North Carolina to Youngstown, Ohio, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8029. We're now joined by one of the country's most knowledgeable political consultants, or not consultants, but analysts, Michael Barone of U.S. News and World Report, also Fox News, and also the author of the American Almanac of American Politics, which is the absolute Bible that's got to be under every on every desk in America if you're a political junkie. Michael, nice to have you with us on Beyond the Beltway.
Nice to be with you again, Bruce.
Has the torch of inevitability of nomination been passed to Barack Obama?
No, I don't. I don't think there's such a thing as inevitability here. We've seen people that seemed inevitably on the way to nominations, like Gary Hart in 1984 after his big victory in the New Hampshire primary. Walter Mondale turned that around, but I think that the polling data suggests that Barack Obama is headed for a victory in New Hampshire on top of his victory in the Iowa caucuses. That's obviously going to be a positive for him. He's also going to be in line for more scrutiny and skepticism. What about that land deal with Tony Rezko? National press hasn't written very much about that. Perhaps we'll see more. So I don't think this thing is over. I don't believe in inevitability here.
Do you think that at this particular point, though, if they start, when I say the media, because obviously Bill Clinton feels the media has given him a pass, if the media tries to go after him too hard, I mean, is it going to be too much of a knock? Is every knock a boost after? I mean, if you're likable, and people are viewing you as the new messiah of the party, I mean, if you start to get roughed up. I mean, aren't people going to react negatively to that?
Well, I think if it gets roughed up unfairly, people are going to react negatively to that. And I think there'll be some people who would say, who'd feel particularly sensitive about how he's treated because he is an African-American. His father was a native of Kenya. And, there are sensitivities about treating black people differently and so forth or adversely. I think that's something that... both the press and his opponents have been kind of wary of. They've been giving him a little more of a softer treatment than some other candidates have received.
And frankly, if I were Barack Obama, I would invite the scrutiny. Because, I'd say, you underestimated me. You didn't think that I would be able to manage this. Now that I've won Iowa, and now that I may have a blowout in New Hampshire, maybe it's time for you to begin to treat me with this kind of respect that you're going to assume I'm going to be your leader-in-chief. And invite the scrutiny. I mean, I actually think that that's a better approach than suddenly being shocked and appalled. I think that actually adds to his gravitas.
That sounds like a smart move to me.
I'd love to give him the advice. Maybe he'll hear it.
We'll send him. You can listen to the podcast
of
the show.
That's right.
We'll send it. I'm sure he's got nothing to do tomorrow. Michael, as you look to the calendar ahead, does John McCain have significant legs? It looks like he's going to do well here on Tuesday. What's the McCain story down the road? Is there any bright spots there for him?
Oh, yeah, but John McCain's got a good chance to win the New Hampshire primary. I don't think it's locked up.
Right.
The latest polls have been pretty close, and we don't know who's going to turn out, whether independents are going to turn out on the Democratic side and vote for Obama or one of the candidates, or are they going to turn out on the Republican side and vote for McCain as they did 8 years ago. We don't know that yet. But I think, he goes into this without a lot of money, but as a well-known figure who's capable usually of holding his own or better, in public interviews and on radio, and on radio programs, on television programs, in interviews with bloggers, which he's been meeting with, having interviews with conservative bloggers, some of whom have been pretty critical of him on some issues. So he's been keeping a heavy schedule, and I think he'll get free media. People admire him, even people who disagree with him on a lot of issues or think that he's temperamentally unsuited to be president. So
what do you think is the of those that are still left standing, what in your view would give the American people the starkest comparison between the Republican and the Democrat? Which two candidates?
The starkest comparison. Well, I don't think you can do that just on an ideological basis, if you will, left to right, because Mike Huckabee, for example, is somewhat to the left of the other Republicans on economic issues and perhaps on foreign policy issues, to the right of them on cultural issues. So it's not a one-dimensional spectrum we're looking at here. One's tempted to say Obama and Huckabee, the two winners in Iowa, but they both have a way of speaking that has something of preacherly uplift to it. They're not scolds like some cultural conservatives or some cultural liberals who are always telling other people what they shouldn't do.
We had a Democrat operative on the program a couple of weeks ago, and he said this was right after the first poll suggested that Huckabee was going to do well in Iowa. He said of the Republican field, Huckabee is the one that scares him the most. As a Democratic political operative, how would you judge him, Arnie? As a
I agree. I think he's incredibly potent. I was listening to someone talk about having listened to Hillary Clinton speak and saying, "Wow, she's so smart," and then hearing Barack Obama speak and say, "Wow, he's so inspirational." You hear Huckabee speak, you think, "Wow, he's so inspirational too." So I'm telling you, there is something very potent there. There's something I know so many Democrats that look at him and they are terrified of him. Why? Because they like him too much. Because they admire him too much.
15 seconds to you, Michael. Last word.
Last word is that both Huckabee and Obama have high upside potential and low downside potential. We don't know how they're going to play out if they're the nominees over the next 10 months.
Michael Barone, thank you very much from U.S. News and World Report and Fox News. Nice to have you with us. Arnie Arneson, thank you very much for being with us. Dean Spiliotis, we thank you very much. Tom Bevan joined us a little bit earlier. Beyond the Belt is produced tonight by Genevieve Production in association with Wilbur Entertainment. On-site support tonight from Ellen Ratner and the Talk Radio News Service, Bob Vinicor of WNTK, our engineer Ken Noonan, Neenan, associate producer Kevin Fuller back home in Chicago, Tom Vercruz, Stephanie Lecce, Patrick Johnson, as well as Kipper McGee, Ed Glab, and engineer Michael Gary at WLS, and in New York at ABC, C.K. Bowker, Brian Wilson, at Westwood One, Dennis Green, Beth Robinson, Ryan McGuire, and Dee Perkins. Until next week, at this same time, when we're back in our home base, this is Bruce Dumont. Good night from New Hampshire.